This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So I'm going to talk to you tonight about preventing tooth decay. And I suspect, looking around the room, that everybody in this room has, at some point in time, had tooth decay, has had some oral problems, and may or may not right now, but I'm going to try and give you an understanding about tooth decay and also some hints about preventing occurrence, recurrence, or for your kids or your grandkids. So when we go to the first slide, what we've got here, of course, is tooth decay. And right here is what we call a frank occlusal cavity, big words, and the occlusal surface is the biting surface of the teeth. So if you just run your tongue along those biting surfaces of the teeth, you can imagine this person here with this huge cavity in there and walking around probably with a lot of pain. So, and I'm going to show you a couple more as well. Here's breakdown of the teeth. An 8-year-old girl in our operating room here under general anesthesia getting all of these teeth fixed. These are all decayed teeth. And that's a young girl. And whatever happened to her subsequently, hopefully she got them all taken care of, which she did by our Dr. Zan here, and learned to look after them after that. And the next one is what we call root caries. This is the tooth right here. These are the gums here. And the exposed tooth roots here. You see these darkened areas here? That's what we call decay of the tooth root, or dental caries of the tooth root. So in your tooth, again, run your tongue around your teeth, and then you can do it with your hand or your tongue. Think about the very edge of your tooth there between the tooth and the gum. There's what we call an exposed tooth root. So your tooth has a root like so with a crown on top of it. And as we get older, once we get from about age 35 onwards, our gums recede and these tooth roots are exposed to the mouth and exposed to tooth decay. And the next slide, if it bothers you, there's no blood in it, but it's a rather different kind of mouth. So this is a slide of a patient from Don Curtis, who's one of our faculty, and he kindly let me use this slide. This is a major breakdown of the teeth, and you've got root decay here, missing enamel. Imagine what the pain that this person's been in over the years. And what Dr. Curtis did with him was to do a full mouth reconstruction. In other words, to replace some of those teeth, to put implants in, to put crowns on. It costs something in the order of about $30,000 at least to do that kind of reconstruction. The reason that that mouth is like that is very simple, tooth decay, that I'm going to talk to you about over the coming few minutes. This is an x-ray taken in part of the mouth of that very same patient. What you see here, this is the bone in the jaw, and this is the tooth root right here. And that is an artificial crown or cap on the top of the tooth. So you'll see there's one there, one there, one there, and one there. And in this case, you've got the middle of the tooth root is filled, and that's what we call a root canal therapy. So if we look at the x-ray here, you'll see this very dark area here, right at the edge of the crown. That's tooth decay. So in this particular case, that person has had prosthodontic work, has had crowns, bridges, and is just decaying around them and continuing to. And that's a huge problem, that decay continues unless we deal with it. So now to a much prettier sight. I took this photograph last year on safari in Africa. And I didn't go there with a crossbow to go and shoot these animals. I went there with a camera to shoot them and spent about 9 days altogether, a fabulous time looking for animals. And this was undoubtedly the most beautiful animal that I saw there. And we're probably about 40 yards away from this animal, sitting in a Toyota Land Cruiser and with no protection whatever. He's not worried about us. And we're sitting in this vehicle, and as long as we stayed in the vehicle, our guides assured us that there was no problem. They don't carry rifles. They carry a tranquilizer gun in case, but they work on the principle when you're sitting in this vehicle, the animals think you're a bigger animal than they are, and they don't come near you. This particular young leopard was, you'll see, he's looking very intently ahead. He was stalking an antelope, and we followed him for about half an hour, just gradually crawling along in our vehicle. And this has got nothing whatever to do with tooth decay, but it's really a beautiful animal and a beautiful picture. So, I'd like to give some disclosures before I get on with the meat of the topic tonight. And firstly, I've got no personal financial interest in any company that I'm going to refer to during this presentation. I'm going to refer to some products. I'm not here to endorse those products. I'm not paid to endorse them. And I'm not saying either personally or from UCSF point of view that we support those products. They're simply examples of what's out there. And I've consulted for or have done research funded by all of these companies listed here, which is most of the oral healthcare companies in the country. So a little bit about me. I'm a distinguished professor of preventive and restorative dentistry here at UCSF, and I'm the dean of the School of Dentistry. So if whatever goes wrong, I get blamed for, and whatever goes right, I take credit for, whether it was me or somebody else that did it. So I've been involved in research and clinical applications of my research for about 40 years now. So I've been at this a while, and the majority of my time in research and clinical research has been related to dental decay, tooth decay, understanding the mechanism and working out how to deal with it. And I've published over 280 articles and book chapters related to research, primarily to tooth decay. So tonight I'm going to talk to you about prevention of tooth decay and how important prevention is. And I can give you a bottom line right here. If you come into our clinics down the road here and you need a crown, it's going to cost you something in the order of $1,000, plus or minus, depending on the crown, depending on a few other things that go with it. For approximately $100 a year, you can prevent the occurrence of such a crown. So if you get a crown every couple of years, you're up about $1,800 right there. So financially, it's important. It's important to stop you from having pain and to help you also chew your food, eat your food, have nutrition, all of those things. So what am I going to do in the next 45, 50 minutes? I hope that you'll understand the process of dental caries, as we call it. That's tooth decay. So I'm going to talk about dental caries as we go. I keep slipping into that, the jargon of the dental profession. That's tooth decay. And it's an infectious transmissible disease. It's a bacterial disease, ladies and gentlemen. And there's no mistake about that. I'm going to teach you a little bit about the pathological factors and the protective factors. So any disease at all, there's pathological factors, there's the pathogen, i.e. a bacteria or a virus, and there's protective factors. And in the case of tooth decay, there's several pathological factors, and there's a whole bunch of protective factors. And lastly, to understand the principles of clinical intervention in the process and how you, everyone sitting in this audience, or your friends and relatives can put this into practice tomorrow or tonight when you go home. So what's dental caries? I suspect that everyone here has experienced it more than once. We've got some of the younger generation coming through now who have never had dental decay. Some of our students coming into the school have never had dental decay. It's hard for them to understand the issues that a patient has because they've never had it themselves. Most of them, if they've had decay at all, have had one or two what we call lesions. So what is decay? It's the breakdown of the tooth by a bacterial action. So we have specific bacteria involved. And it's not just one species. There's several species involved, and I'll talk a little more about that in a few minutes. We have what's called Streptococcus mutans. And there's the streptococci, which are a whole range of bacteria that cause different diseases. And we're talking here about Streptococcus mutans and Streptococcus sybriodus. Those are two species that cause tooth decay. And then we're talking also about Lactobacillus species. And for those of you who eat yogurt or have done, that's loaded with lactobacilli. And those good lactobacilli are not so good lactobacilli. So those bacteria live on the surface of your teeth. And you feed it with fermentable carbohydrates. How many of you had dinner tonight before you came? All right. Almost everybody. I did too. It was pretty quick between one meeting and another and then coming down here. How many of you had dessert to go with that dinner? Anybody? Nobody had dessert. Darn. Oh, well. Oh, one of you did. Well, within what you had tonight, you probably had fermentable carbohydrates. So whatever carbohydrates you had in the last hour or so, your bacteria in your mouth are now feeding upon those, producing acids. They like to have dinner as well as you do. And whenever you have dinner, you provide them very nicely, for free, with what they want to eat on. So they produce acids as waste products. And those acids travel into the tooth and dissolve the mineral. And our tooth mineral is a calcium phosphate. It's made of calcium, made of phosphate. Just like our bones, it's almost the same mineral as we have in our bones. It's very closely related. So that acid dissolves the teeth. If you take vinegar and you take an extracted tooth and you drop it in a bottle of vinegar or a glass of vinegar or a little tub of vinegar, it will dissolve the mineral. And acetic acid in vinegar is one of the acids that the bacteria produce in your mouth. So basically, what's happening is your plaque, as we call it, in the teeth, on the teeth, are bacteria that are feeding upon the carbohydrates that you feed upon, producing acid just like vinegar that are dissolving the teeth that they live on. And dental caries is a transmissible bacterial infection. You can pass it from one person to the other. It's not easy to do, but it's passed through saliva. You don't have to pass the saliva from one person to another. You can pass the saliva onto a drinking vessel and then pass that to someone else. Kids are really good at that. Little kids that play and suck toys and pass the toy from one to the other, they're passing their bacteria of all sorts from one person to the other. And the bacteria love to live in saliva. There's lots of proteins in there. Saliva is that fluid that's in your mouth, hopefully. Some people don't have much saliva, which protects your teeth. It's also the vehicle for passing from one person to the other. So I'm going to give you some cold, hard facts about dental caries, and then you will understand the process a little more and be able to help you prevent it occurring further or continuing if you're in a risk situation right now. As you gather, I travel quite a bit, and some of that, quite a little bit of that, is around the world talking about the topic I'm talking about tonight, particularly in depth to various dental schools and dental societies around the world as to how they might change their dental practice to help their patients better. But one totally non-professional trip was where I went with my significant other to the Antarctic about 4 years ago now. Had a fabulous trip. It's one of the most spectacular places I've ever been. And this is a huge iceberg the size of this building, just floating around. And only 10% of it's out of the water. And it's rather like a tooth with decay. This would be the outer surface, and under here we've got part of it is dissolved. And that's what happens in the mouth. The bacteria on the surface of the tooth up here produce the acids that travel down into the tooth, start dissolving it, the minerals start coming out, they get trapped near the surface, and that whole process keeps on cycling around, and you get subsurface demineralization, which ends up as a cavity when it all collapses. So on the surface of your teeth, just run your tongue along the teeth. Does it feel a little bit slippery, a little bit sticky? That's plaque. It's a bacterial layer that every single one, including me, in this room has got on the surface of their teeth. In that plaque, which you see a photograph of here on the surface of a tooth in the mouth, this was a replica taken. It's a very clever technique where you can take a replica from the surface and you can do a scanning electron micrograph of the bacteria on that tooth surface. There's millions of bacteria on the surface of our teeth. And if I was to take a saliva sample, if I had you spit in a little container for a couple of minutes, we could plate that out and show you that every one of you had several million bacteria in every teaspoon of saliva. Scary thought. You've got billions of bacteria floating around in your mouth and on your body. Most of them are good guys. There's a little sphere here, another one here, another one up here. These are the streptococci, spherical, almost spherical bacteria. And those streptococci are like the Streptococcus mutans, the Streptococcus sabrinus that I was talking about. Those are the terrorists, and you only need a few of them. Less than 0.1% in most people, and that's enough to cause the destruction of the teeth. So here's an electron microscope view of an individual culture. These are pure bacteria right here. And you'll see instead of a sphere, they're splitting out into almost a rod. So it's very clever. You feed these guys with sucrose or glucose, sugar, and they feed and they start splitting. No clever reproduction, they just feed and they split into two. Simple as that. So that happens in the mouth. Those of you who had any forms of carbohydrate in your dinner tonight have doubled the number of these bacteria in your mouth in the last half an hour. But that's all right because you've got protection against them, hopefully. And when you have sucrose, that's sugar to all of us, that leads to what we call extracellular polysaccharides. That means that these bacteria link these sucrose molecules together and they form a starch, just like the starch in a potato. And that's what makes your teeth really sort of slippery and almost slimy. That's that extracellular polysaccharide, the more sucrose that you eat. So that's the streptococci. Lactobacilli, this is like the lactobacilli in yogurt. Very tiny little filamentous bacteria under the microscope. And they're like terrorists also. They produce lactic acid from fermentable carbohydrates. So what's a fermentable carbohydrate? Here's some examples of foods that have fermentable carbohydrates in. Breakfast cereal, especially sugared breakfast cereal, which in this country is the common one. If you go try and hunt for a cereal that's not sugar added, it's a pretty hard, difficult thing to find unless you go to a market where, like I go down and live down in Pacifica in the Oceania market there, and I don't have shares in the company. I'm not here to promote the company at all. They have a whole area where there's sugar-free stuff, which is great. And there used to be a market down there that had fructose-free stuff as well. But mostly, you look at all of these things here. We've got pretzels. That's carbohydrate, loaded with carbohydrate. It's potatoes, cooked potatoes, which have broken down into sucrose, glucose, fructose, and some starch. The bacteria can feed on the contents of all of these packages here and produce acid. We can feed on them as well. So essentially, sucrose, glucose, fructose, and cooked starch. And many of the sweetening procedures in this country are done with high fructose corn syrup. It's made from corn, it's extracted from corn, and it's essentially fructose in bulk in solution. Then that's added. So if you look at the food ingredients or the labels for the food ingredients, you will often see high fructose corn syrup high up on the list. Manufacturers love to add sucrose or fructose because it tastes good and we're hooked on it. And that is, let's put it very succinctly, that adds to tooth decay, it adds to obesity, and it adds to ill health to eat too much of that stuff. So let's come back to decay. We have what's called our karyogenic bacteria. Caries is tooth decay, and caries-producing bacteria are called karyogenic bacteria. That's our Streptococcus mutans, Streptococcus sabrinus, lactobacilli, and a bunch of others as well. There's what's called bifidobacteria. Anybody heard of bifidobacteria? I didn't think so. Every one of you have got some bifidos living in your mouth. You didn't know you had bifido living in your mouth, did you? Well, you do. And you've probably got actinomyces living in your mouth. And you've certainly got lactobacilli living in your mouth. You've got all sorts of stuff living in your mouth that you didn't know you had. Fermentable carbohydrates I've just talked about, put those two together and they produce organic acids. That's lactic acid, acetic acid, propionic acid, and others. And those acids are weak acids, but they travel into your teeth just like a truck loaded with terrorists going somewhere. The terrorists jump out of the truck and they're acids and they start dissolving your teeth. And the second stage is once those acids get down inside the tooth, they attack your dental mineral, which is called a carbonated hydroxyapatite. Who cares? It's an acid-soluble calcium phosphate that makes your teeth strong and hard, stuck together with glue, which is like proteins and lipids. And if that demineralization continues, you get decalcified areas, which look different. I'll show you some of that in a moment. And you end up with cavities. That's the simple process of dental decay. And ladies and gentlemen, it was first published in 1890. Not 1990, 1890. By a person called W.D. Miller, who did a nice experiment showing that if you took powdered up teeth and you mixed it with acid, they dissolved and you got decay. We've come somewhat since 1890, but we've still got a ways to go. But we understand the process pretty well. You've probably all heard of talk of biofilm. Well, biofilm is any biological film anywhere, not necessarily in the body. And here's a strip of cement sticking out into the Pacific Ocean. The waves have been crashing over it. And look at these creatures that have made their home on there. What a place to live, huh? You've got these waves crashing on you. You've got food being supplied every second as the waves crash over. But it's a pretty tough place to live, right? Getting your head bashed in all the time by the waves crashing over you. But that's a biofilm, ladies and gentlemen, like the biofilm in your mouth. It's very hardy. It sticks there. And you've got to live with it. And that biofilm that produces acids, as I've described, ends up with what we call a white spot lesion. This is a regular tooth here and another one. And the children's tooth has just fallen out there and shown a decayed area. Can you see that right there? It's a white spot. Why is it white? It's white because the tooth is what we call translucent, almost glowing. These here, the sort of sheen, shiny, the light is being transmitted through, rather almost like these lights on the wall here. Very similar to that. And then when you get a decayed area, some of the mineral has lost and the light bounces around now. And instead of having it shining through, it's what we call scattered and shows up as a white spot. eventually, if more and more dissolves, that will end up as a cavity. That's dental decay. So now I want to introduce you to the concept of a caries balance. And it's a concept that you can think of any disease with, but dental decay is a more complicated disease than most. And we have what's called our pathological factors. And that is our acid-producing bacteria that I've just described. Our fermentable carbohydrates, frequent eating and drinking of fermentable carbohydrates. It's frequency that's important, ladies and gentlemen, not the amount that you have in a day, how many times you have sucrose or glucose in a day. So if you're used to snacking frequently, think every time you snack, whoops, my tooth is dissolving. Half an hour later, another little snack, whoops, my tooth is dissolving. If you're down to 3 meals a day, that's good for various reasons. And lastly, which probably to some extent affects everybody in this room, subnormal saliva flow and function. I'll say more about that in a few minutes. On the right-hand side, we've got normal saliva flow and all the components in it. The fluid in our mouth, just swish your mouth around for a minute. And you can feel that fluid in there, right? Can everybody feel that? Anybody not? You better come visit us in the clinic tomorrow. So, that saliva is protecting your teeth and your gums and the roof of your mouth against bad things happening. So that's one protective factor. Second protective factors are fluoride that we're providing in some way, shape, or form, calcium and phosphate in saliva. That's part of our body's normal process. And thirdly, antibacterial substances, which you can get from your dentist. In some countries, well, some of them here you can buy over the counter, but in some countries around the world, you can walk into the drugstore and get these antibacterials to deal with your tooth decay. But most people don't know, A, that they exist, B, that they can buy them, and C, what to do with them. I'll tell you in a few minutes. So, this is the caries balance. And if it gets out of balance and comes in this direction, that's the pathological factors outweighing the protective factors, and caries or dental decay continues. Our job as individuals is to swing. Could you tell them I can't answer it right now? That'd be great. No. Tell them I'm busy. That'd be great.
Apologies.
No problem. We need to swing it in that direction. We need to swing it in the protective factor direction. So, any of you rode or ridden or do ride a motorcycle? One person at least. Okay. Well, you can imagine riding a motorcycle, right? And you're probably all looking at this and thinking, I would never ride that thing. Well, I used to. I just sold it a couple of years ago. And I'm still alive. I only came off it twice at low speeds. So imagine you're a motorcycle rider, okay? The trick with a motorcycle is A, to stay in balance, and B, not to hit anything. Other than that, you're good. You can do all sorts of stuff. All right. So imagine you're riding this motorcycle, and I've seen this happen. You're in shorts, T-shirt, and flip-flops, and you fall off the motorcycle. You'll lose most of the exposed skin off your body doing that. Now let's be clever and put on a leather suit, which is what I used to ride with, or a sort of a Kevlar suit and a helmet. If you fall off this thing at 5 miles an hour, you'll do very little damage to anything. You might scuff up this beautiful shiny side a little bit. You might scuff up your leather. I came off mine somewhere between, actually my son's motorcycle, that was even more embarrassing, at between 5 and 10 miles an hour. He was in Iraq at the time, and he said, Dad, would you mind just riding my motorcycle every couple of weeks to keep it going? So I'd been out on mine for 3 hours. I came back and said, oh, I can do anything. So we lived in Montara on a little dirt road. So I got on his motorcycle and I went out indestructible. leaned into the first corner at about 10 miles an hour on a dirt road, the bike disappears out from underneath me. So I'm lying here on the dirt road thinking that was not a very good idea. But I didn't break anything. I didn't even damage my leather suit. I damaged his motorcycle just a little bit, which I fixed, and we're good to go. So that's the low speed out of balance. And that can be fixed. So if we think of that leather suit there as water fluoridation, fluoridation in the drinking water, which we've got in San Francisco, that's going to protect us against a relatively low-level challenge. Now let's crank it up to 50 miles an hour instead of 5. You come off your motorcycle then, wearing the same thing, the helmet, the leather. Did you ever come off your motorcycle, sir? You did. What speed were you traveling at the time? Roughly.
Roughly
25. 25? Did you do any damage to yourself?
Not really.
No? Did you do any damage to your motorcycle?
About $1,000.
About how much dollars?
$1,000.
About $1,000. Okay. So that's like the halfway between the water fluoridation and the next level. So you come off at 50 miles an hour, you're in trouble. You probably break something. You'll break your motorcycle for sure, and you may break an arm or a leg or your head. 25 miles an hour is not so bad. I've done a 25-mile-an-hour crash and didn't actually damage anything. It was on a wet road at the time, and everything just slid. It was good. So that's like having your fluoride toothpaste twice a day. That's going to protect you against that kind of crash. Now let's ramp it up to 95 miles an hour. Any members of the California Highway Patrol in the audience? No, good. Okay, well, I've traveled over 95 miles an hour on my motorcycle. It's thrilling, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. It'd be even more thrilling if you came off. That would be very exciting. But the trick is to stay in balance. If you come off at 95 miles an hour, what's the consequences, sir?
Very serious.
You're shredded.
If you're alive.
Yeah, you're probably dead.
Yeah,
right. One of my friends came off at a lower speed than that, and he was 6 months in hospital getting his spine reconstructed. Okay, that's what happens in a high-risk individual with your teeth, ladies and gentlemen. Doesn't matter whether you're wearing a leather suit or a helmet, you're going to crash and burn. So keep that in mind. Now, we have here the consequence of somebody traveling at 100 miles an hour dentally. Only he wasn't really prepared to believe it. So this is an old slide taken of a 55-year-old man who came into our clinic some years ago now, but it still happens, not here. And he came in with a reasonably good mouth of teeth, and he had cancer to the head and neck. And he was going to have radiation therapy, which he did, and it still happens right now. There's somebody having radiation therapy probably in the hospital right now, or sometime today or tomorrow. And that radiation therapy tends to knock out to the head and neck, knocks out the saliva glands, and you don't have any saliva flow anymore. So 6 months later, he came back. See the teeth here? These are all decayed. They're worn away. They're white, pasty, black, stained. Total mouth destruction in 6 months because of lack of saliva flow. It's as simple as that. And this is a graphic illustration of what happens when your saliva flow is reduced. Now, I'm not allowed to ask you this next question. I'm going to ask it, but don't put your hands up. Answer it yourself. How many of you are on 2 or 3 medications? Okay. Probably most of us in the audience. But you're not to put up your hands because that's a HIPAA violation for me to ask the question and expect you to answer it unless you're sitting in a chair with me. So think about that, because if you're on 2 or more medications, there's a good chance that your saliva function is impaired. So what we call saliva dysfunction is when you have less saliva, and instead of having 1 or 2 milliliters per minute, you might have 0.1 milliliters per minute, maybe 1/10 of your saliva function. And there's several things that produce what we call hyposalivation, under salivation. One is radiation to the head and neck for cancer treatment. And this goes on all the time. It knocks out the saliva glands. if the radiation is actually going right to a tumor and the saliva glands are in the way of the radiation. You can mask the saliva glands. You can try and get the angle right. And the oncologists are very aware of this, and they're doing it well these days. So that's not all that common, but it's not uncommon either. Chemotherapy. Number of people with chemotherapy is huge, and that tends to reduce your salivary function. Dehydration, long-distance bike riding, hiking, over-exercising without drinking. That's short-term dehydration. Your saliva recovers. But this is the big one. Medications with hypersalivatory side effects. In other words, that reduces the saliva flow. Anti-anxiety medications. Pause, think about it. Any of you on those? Antidepressants. Pause, think about it. Anybody on that? Antihistamines. That's against your histamine reaction, allergic reaction, allergy medicines. Antipsychotic. And worst of all, multiple of those medications. I can tell you it's not a HIPAA violation because I choose to tell you I'm on two medications a day. And one of those medications is hyposalivatory in most people, but not for me, which is nice because I have normal salivary function. For you, it might be a different story. So many people in our society are on multiple medications with one or more fitting in those categories. And if you are, you may be suffering from what's called dry mouth. You may always be trying to stimulate your saliva or drinking because your mouth is a little dry. And if that's the case, you almost certainly have a hyposalivation and you don't have enough saliva coming to protect your teeth. It's probably the most under-recognized, Caries, risk factor right up there. Another factor is recreational drug use. It's not so much the soft drugs, although that can affect for some people, but there's a condition that we call meth mouth for people that are on methamphetamine, for example. And they come into our clinics and their teeth have just totally broken down because their saliva is highly compromised. So when you're working with a dentist on this, at follow-up visits, and what you should do whenever you go to your dentist is make sure that you fill out your medical form with your medications on. Why? Because your dentist needs to know in order to decide whether you're taking medications that will compromise your saliva. And if you're on new medications in between and you go to your dentist again, you should make sure to update your medical records. They should ask about that, but they don't always do it. So patients in general don't know the hazards. And I tell you what, most physicians don't know the dental hazards also of these medications. So I'm going to change direction a little bit now. And this is the ship that we went to the Antarctic on. 50 passengers, a crew of about 10, and that was it. None of this huge 2,000 people on a big cruise ship. It was really up close and personal, a fantastic experience. The only disadvantage with a small ship like that is crossing the Drake Passage with waves that were 30 feet high. They were crashing over the top over here, and this boat was like a cork in a washing machine. It was a rather interesting period of 36 hours crossing there. And my significant other and I were the only passengers that showed up for dinner that night. The others were all, talking to themselves and moaning sounds in their cabins at the time. What's that got to do with decay? Well, this ship here was a Russian supply vessel to the Antarctic at one point, and it's got a double hull. It's got all sorts of protection against the dangers of travel in the Antarctic. And of course, if the water freezes, in other words, the saliva slows down, you can't go anywhere. So that's just an illustration on the hypersalivation problem. So let's think about drilling and filling now. When you've probably all been to the dentist, you've probably all had some cavity that got drilled out and a filling that got put in. Well, they used a smaller drill than that, but it was the same purpose, to drill out the cavity and get ready to put a very nice filling in It might be a plastic filling, it might be a mercury filling, and that goes in to fill the cavity. And the question is, does drilling and filling really fix caries? What's the clinical relevance of what I've just been talking to you about? It's extremely relevant because drilling and filling does not fix the disease. It fixes the hole in the tooth. So, for example, different deal. You look at your arm one day and it's red and swollen. And you say, oh, wow, I better go to urgent care. So you come to urgent care across the street here, and some doc looks at it and says, oh, you've got a red, swollen arm here. We better cut it off. So they cut it off at the elbow, and it stops the disease, right? No. The disease is through the rest of your body as well. But in dentistry, for years, we've been doing exactly that. So we have to take care of the disease as well as the hole in the teeth. So I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I ran a randomized clinical trial some years ago looking at anti-caries, anti-decay therapy targeted according to risk assessment. So we set up this with high-risk individuals. That means people who are likely to get new decay in the next year or so. And we set it up, and there were numerous conclusions that we got out of that. And this is a minor diversion here, and it's a diversion because during that same period of time, I went and trekked up in the Himalayas towards Mount Everest, and this is one of the most beautiful mountains you can see anywhere in the world. And it happened to look like one of the graphs that we plotted of the bacteria in the mouth at the time. So it shows you how my mind works just a little weirdly. So what were the conclusions of that clinical trial? Patients with cavities, one or more frank, that means open cavities, indicates high risk for future new cavities. So somebody with a cavity right now, today, is likely to come back in the next 2 years with one or more new cavities. It's almost definitive. In our clinics down the road here, 65% of people with cavities used to come back with a new cavity within 2 years. It's a given. Why? Because it's an indicator that we're loaded with the disease in our bodies, in our mouths. It means we've got moderate to high levels of our Streptococcus mutans and Sobrinus, moderate to high levels of Lactobacilli. And the patients with a high bacterial challenge, a really high bacterial challenge, you can give them as much fluoride as you want, and it won't overcome that challenge. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, placing restorations, that means fillings, which we have to do, and dentists are very good at doing that, does not reduce the bacterial loading in the rest of the mouth. So the disease is still there. We still have to take care of it. So, folks, I'm going to talk to you now about protective factors. And then we'll wrap it up in a period of 5 or 10 minutes or so about what you can do yourselves now that you understand what's going on. So the first one is saliva components and flow. I've already talked about the bad aspect of not having enough saliva. But saliva contains a lot of important components, calcium and phosphate, to replace the calcium and phosphate that got dissolved out of the tooth. Carries fluoride from using your fluoride toothpaste. It has proteins in there and lipids, that's fatty materials, that form a protective layer on the tooth surface. It's got proteins that keep the calcium in solution. If you put calcium phosphate in my water bottle, it would just drop out as a white precipitate. If we put the proteins in there that are in saliva, it will keep the calcium and phosphate in solution. It's got buffers, chemicals that neutralize the acid, bicarbonate. You've all heard of baking soda. Well, it's in our saliva. It's in our body, in our blood. Bicarbonate, phosphate, and small proteins. We've got antibacterial substances, immunoglobulins, lactoferrin, etc., etc. You don't need to know the names of them or what they are if you wish. I can tell you more about it. But those are all of the good things in saliva that we need to keep us from our cavities progressing. So our saliva contains several proteins with a negative charge that combine with the calcium to keep it in solution and provide that calcium when it's needed. So let's go now to the Great Barrier Reef off of the coast of Australia. And I spent a few days on this island with my significant other. It was fabulous being there, surrounded by water. Lots of water sports, swimming, sailing, drinking wine, whatever, having fun. If that water wasn't there, this would be out on a muddy, horrible area that you couldn't get to, and nobody would want to go to that island. That's the difference between saliva and not. So what about fluoride? Fluoride is one of the most amazing ions that exists. It's natural, of course. It's in the periodic table. It's in our minerals. It's in our water. It's everywhere. And we have the anti-fluoride folks who say that we must not poison ourselves with fluoride. Well, folks, fluoride surrounds us. It's in our atmosphere. It's a very abundant element on Earth. And it has some wonderful positive effects in terms of decay. So our white spot lesion that I showed you before is the early stages of decay. And this lesion is what we call arrested. It's been stopped. And it's been stopped by fluoride. So now I'm going to take you on a trip down into the tooth, and I'm going to take you down inside that lesion that I just showed you. And down inside there you will find crystals of calcium and phosphate. This is one that I imaged years ago at 3 million times magnification. That's an incredibly high magnification, very tricky technique. And what you're seeing, every one of these black dots that make up this row here, is a calcium atom. So you're looking at atomic resolution here. And these white patches here are ones that have been dissolved away by the acid. You see, it's like a six-sided open hole here. And that's because of the clustering of the atoms in the structure. When the acid dissolves it, it dissolves the weak areas away. And as that goes on, these crystals get smaller and smaller until eventually the whole thing breaks down. So that's what we call demineralization at atomic level. So our dental mineral, our organic acid, if fluoride's present, it actually inhibits that mineral loss. And it inhibits it because if this is our calcium phosphate mineral right here, our crystal, millions of them inside the tooth, the fluoride sticks on the surface, attracted to the calcium, and that can no longer dissolve in acid. So if you take your fluoride toothpaste in the morning before you have breakfast, it will coat the crystals in your early decay and stop them from dissolving as you have breakfast. And it's rather like these police in Athens. I was there for an international pediatric dentistry conference on the day of a national strike and riots in the middle of Athens. And we decided we'd walk through because you couldn't get a train. There were no trains running. You couldn't get a taxi. We would walk right through and go to the Acropolis. Well, we needed to go through the streets here, and they were blocked off by these police vehicles and these guys with tear gas. So this is like the fluoride ions that you saw in the previous slide protecting that outer surface there. As an aside, I can suggest to any of you, if you're in this situation, to turn around and walk the other way, because there's a really good chance they're going to fire tear gas at you, and that's a nasty substance, to say the least. That's the first and last time in my life that I wanted to experience tear gas. But it was fun, I suppose. All right, so fluoride inhibits demineralization. That's step one of our fluoride action. So another analogy here. I used to climb frozen waterfalls when I lived in the Northeast for a Sunday morning activity. And you climbed them with spikes on your feet and axes in your hand. And you looked for defect sites here. That's what the acid is doing. But we can also put a new coating on this to make it climbable. So that's what we call remineralization. It's putting the calcium and phosphate back into the tooth. And that's our body's natural repair mechanism against tooth decay. So we have calcium in the tooth water. That's in the water amongst the crystals. There's millions of crystals surrounded by water. These teeth right here, touch them with your tongue again, are approximately 12 to 15% water. Amazing, huh? They're filled with water. And our dentin underlying the enamel is about 25% water. But that's good. We want it that way. So that means that the calcium can travel amongst the crystals, the phosphate can travel amongst the crystals, and rebuild those crystal remnants that I just showed you with a new low-soluble mineral. And fluoride speeds up that process and makes the new mineral less soluble. So let's go now to the body of an early lesion or early decayed area. These little spikes here are the individual crystals. We're looking at about 30,000 times magnification down inside the decayed area, and these individual crystals can be regrown. So if we provide calcium and phosphate into those crystals, the surface will grow back up to a point and will then be more resistant than it was originally. Tonight's a cool night out there. If I go outside without this jacket on, I'm going to start shivering pretty soon. If I wear this jacket and then I put my Gore-Tex jacket on top, I'm going to be toasty and great. So that's what we're doing with these crystals. We're putting a jacket on them, which is different from the crystal itself. So here's a partially dissolved crystal at 3 million time magnification. These little dots here, this is 3 calcium atoms. These are areas where they can dissolve. And then we use our fluoride toothpaste with saliva, and lo and behold, we have a bigger crystal, straight sides, hexagonal shaped, with these new layers overlying the subsurface area that you can see here. And now that crystal is more resistant. So the more you use your fluoride toothpaste, the more resistant your decayed areas will become, and they may even stop decaying any further. So here's a slide taken of me, believe it or not, when I had hair and my beard was a different color, in the mid-80s, in Athens, standing on the Acropolis right outside the Parthenon, okay, which was decaying at that point in time dramatically because of the acid atmosphere of Athens. These are all new blocks that they carved, exactly the same as the decayed blocks, and they put them back up here, and now, 30 years later, this whole scaffolding has gone, and we've got a reconstructed new Parthenon. And that was there when the Olympic Games were there a few years ago, looking in resplendent glory. What you didn't see was the backside of it, which was still being reconstructed at the time. And they've coated these blocks with some sort of silicone compound to stop them demineralizing. So that's rather like what's happening in the mouth. Here we are on the surface of the crystal again, fluoride negative, attracting to calcium, attracting phosphate, attracting fluoride, calcium, and phosphate, so that you get a whole new layer of mineral rich in fluoride on the surface of that crystal. And lo and behold, like the renewed Parthenon up on the Acropolis, looking here just like it did 2,000 years ago, only now resistant to the polluted atmosphere of Athens, where they don't have emission controls like we've got in California. So you can pretty much taste the fumes of the vehicles. So this simple diagram sums it up. Our enamel and dentin crystals, dissolved by the acid from the bacteria, giving us partially dissolved crystals, which can be remineralized from saliva with calcium and phosphate and the fluoride that we've provided, producing an acid-resistant surface layer. And that's what you can do every day of the year. So here's a graph with pH up here, 7 being neutral, 5 being acidic, and time along here. Breakfast, pH falls, mineral dissolves. Saliva neutralizes. We have a morning coffee break, drops, and keeps on dropping. The more demineralizations during the day, the more your decay will progress. The less demineralization during this period of time, we can get remineralization. So remineralization with saliva between breakfast and lunch, and from dinner all night until breakfast, you can remineralize. So a real good time to use your fluoride toothpaste is after dinner, before bed, and that fluoride is going to enhance your remineralization all night. And the bad thing to do is to have a sugary snack, sugary beverage, immediately before you go to sleep, because that sits amongst the plaque and they produce acid all night and you get demineralization all night instead. Got it? So I can show this slide in California. I once showed it in West Virginia. And it's a reconstruction of the Battle of Gettysburg. And 200 years later, they're still upset about this, some reason or other. Anyway, here it's okay. This is what's going on in the mouth, in your mouths, several times a day. Demineralization, remineralization, demineralization, remineralization. And if we've got fluoride there to help us, then we're going to enhance remineralization. And our tooth is going to look beautiful. That's sunset on Mount Amitabha in the Himalayas, right next to Mount Everest. And lastly, which I'm not going to describe in any detail, our fluoride can also inhibit the bacteria if you're using a high concentration of fluoride. So, folks, now I'm going to get down to the nitty-gritty of what you can do and what you can do in conjunction with your dentist if you can't do it all yourself. What can we do with this knowledge? We can go to the island of Santorini and bask in the sun and eat wonderful Greek food without too much sugar, and we still won't get obese. We'll feel great, and it won't cost us all that much because the Greek economy has gone to da-da-da in a handbasket, and we can have a fun time. But it's not realistic. We're living here, and we've got to continue doing what we're doing. So one of the things that I want to emphasize, that fluoride in the drinking water is effective, and it's effective for everyone in this audience just the same as it is for children, because it has an effect on the surface of the teeth just like I was describing. But there's not enough fluoride there to overcome a high bacteria challenge. So fluoride in the drinking water works, and it works for children and adults. So here we go, thinking about, again, what's the clinical relevance of remineralization. Fluoride products enhance remineralization, and it's our body's natural repair mechanism. So how can you take advantage of this tonight or tomorrow? You can walk into Safeway or Trader Joe's or whatever, and you can look at the shelf that's loaded with fluoride toothpaste, and you can buy some of that, and you can take it home and use it. And I'm not here to support any particular company by any means, but the big companies, Colgate, Procter & Gamble with Crest and AIM, those are all big companies that have guaranteed products that work. And not every fluoride toothpaste works. And then, of course, we have the anti-fluoride movement, which says take the fluoride out of toothpaste because we don't want to poison ourselves. We'd rather have tooth decay. Well, you've got to make that choice, okay? And if you take nothing else away from you tonight, I want you to pause 1 second here. This publication by Curnow, Pine and co-workers in England in 2002, what they did was they took classes of children aged around 12 and they supervised toothbrushing once a day in class in the test group. And the parents came in and helped with that, and the parents supervised again at home. So those children had twice a day supervised fluoride toothbrushing. It wasn't the toothbrushing that did it. It was the fluoride being supplied to the mouth. The control group was classes in schools that said they brushed twice a day but had no supervision. You know what the difference was? 56% reduction in dental decay. So just by brushing with a fluoride toothpaste twice a day, you can protect your teeth or your children's teeth or your grandchildren's teeth or your next-door neighbor's teeth if they'll do it. That message alone, if you take nothing else home tonight, that's one of my key messages. Brush twice a day or three times a day with a fluoride toothpaste. It'll make a huge difference. So brushing twice a day or three times a day with a fluoride-containing toothpaste is one of the most effective ways to control dental decay. But If you've got continuing decay problems, even doing that, then you have to control the bacteria. It's as simple as that, ladies and gentlemen. Think of that Caries balance that I talked about before. We have to increase the protective factors and decrease the pathological factors. So what toothpaste do you choose? Oh, my goodness. Every time I go shopping, which is two or three times a week for groceries, I walk down the aisle with the toothpaste on just to see what's going on. There's something new every day, and it's not new in reality. It's new because it's got a new gimmick on it. The bottom line is, does it or does it not have fluoride in it? And there's sodium fluoride. You can read this on the labels. There's stannous fluoride, so Crest has sodium fluoride in it. Most of the toothpastes have sodium fluoride these days. Colgate Total, which is a really good toothpaste, has sodium fluoride plus all sorts of other stuff to whiten the teeth, to protect against calculus and so on. Crest Pro Health, which is another one of my favorites, has stannous fluoride, that's tin, which is antibacterial, and it's extremely well formulated. You can also get a whitening version of that. It doesn't really whiten, it just stops it darkening. So that's sodium fluoride, that's stannous fluoride, this is sodium fluoride plus all sorts of other stuff. And then we've got this one, which is what I use, the age-defying toothpaste. And you can see the result, right? I don't look 85, do I? So here we go, and I'm not, but anyway. So Arm & Hammer here has baking soda for its abrasive. It helps clean the teeth. It's also antibacterial. It's got sodium fluoride there. It has peroxide there to help bleach your teeth. It's a great product. And all joking aside, I do use this particular product, or this one, or this one. Aquafresh. Again, sodium fluoride plus whitening agent. So those are some of the big boys. And then we have Colgate with sodium monofluorophosphate, which also works. And I won't bore you with all the details of why these are different ingredients. They all work. Sodium monofluorophosphate works, but Colgate Total has sodium fluoride. If you want to spend half an hour afterwards, I can explain to you why one has one and one the other. Doesn't matter. Just buy whichever one you like the flavor of and use the darn stuff. Okay? So what else do we have? We have over-the-counter fluoride mouth rinses. So Colgate has Fluoriguard, which, darn Colgate, they just came out with a new packaging recently and I haven't had time to take a new photograph. And ACT, anti-cavity fluoride rinse. These have 0.05% sodium fluoride. Oh, something I didn't put on the slide. These toothpastes have 1,000 part per million fluoride. 1,000. Keep that in mind. Easy number to remember, right? 1,000 part per million fluoride. These mouth rinses here have 220 parts per million fluoride. So that's one-fifth, one-fourth to one-fifth, depending whether it's 1,000 or 1,100. But these are very effective because you don't wash out afterwards. Toothpaste, you use your toothpaste and you wash out with water. Another little tip to take home, use your toothpaste, swish it around with a little water and spit it out. Don't wash it out. And that will give you much better protection right there because it will keep your concentration higher. If you use a fluoride mouth rinse afterwards, that's great too because you're not washing out with water. You're rinsing out food debris and whatever, and that will give you added protection. This one happens to be alcohol-free. This one has alcohol in it to dissolve the flavor. And anybody who has orthodontic brackets is likely to have decay around the brackets. And back in 1987, beat that, almost 30 years ago now, we published a clinical trial that clearly showed we could stop this decay totally with an over-the-counter fluoride toothpaste and an over-the-counter fluoride mouth rinse. Just the combination of those two twice a day. Got lost in the literature. Nobody believed what we wrote. Anyway, no, that's not true. The biggest issue, ladies and gentlemen, I leave it to you to deal with, is compliance. Compliance. You know what's good for you, but how many of us do that? People smoke still. Can you believe that? I'm not going to embarrass myself or anybody here by asking whether anybody in the audience still smokes. You probably don't, or you wouldn't be coming to a mini medical series. But smoking is still a huge issue, and people know that they're going to die of lung cancer, very likely, but they still smoke. So, folks, compliance, actually doing this twice a day, just get in the habit and do it. So here's a photograph of yours truly down in the Antarctic on a spectacular day. There's no pollution down there, ladies and gentlemen. The colours are the most brilliant colours of nature that you'll see anywhere in the world. So that takes me into fluoride in the dental office. And by the way, if any of you need dental care, and I'm not here to sell this, I'm just going to tell you what's available. Right down the hill here at 707 Parnassus Avenue, two buildings down, you can walk in there anytime and get your dental care. Trick is you have to pay for it. We're not a benevolent institution. We're an educational institution. If you want the very best care, we have the very best faculty in faculty practice, and you've got to pay a premium for that. All your insurance does if you have dental insurance. If you're on Dentical or Medi-Cal, you can get most of your dentistry taken care of under that. Some procedures are not covered, which is why I don't have any hair, because it is a hair-tearing experience to try and administer that. But you can walk into that building down there, walk up to the front desk, and say, I would like to have my dental care done here. You can have your dental care done either in the student clinics, which takes a while, but it's supervised by faculty, 8 students to 1 faculty. And you can have that done at a price cheaper than you can get outside if you're paying cash. If you've got insurance, we'll cover it according to the insurance. Then if you want to go to the next level up, you go to our resident clinics, of which we have about 15 different ones doing different specialties. And if you want to go to the ultimate, you go to the various faculty practices and get the very best in the country, if not the world. So that's available right down the road here. And in those clinics, you can get fluoride done in the dental office or at home by prescription from those providers, including the student clinic. So office-provided dental products or prescription-provided dental products have 5,000 part per million or more. So the over-the-counter is 1,000. Prescription fluoride toothpaste has 5,000 part per million. Fluoride varnish has 22,000 parts per million. The advantages, they don't require you to comply as much. That's the fluoride varnish. The fluoride toothpaste, you still need to use it twice a day. I'll come back to that in a minute. And it forms what we call a slowly soluble calcium fluoride deposit. So this high concentration fluoride reacts with the calcium, dumps it in the plaque, in the lesion, and over several weeks, it's like a slow-release device. And if you're using the 5,000 part per million toothpaste twice a day, you get amazingly increased protection compared with the over-the-counter product. So if you want to read more about that, you can go to the American Dental Association site. You can find a consensus document published in 2006 that tells you about the fluoride gel in the dental office, the fluoride varnish in the dental office. The bottom line for you is that your dentist can apply to you as adults, and you have to pay for it. It varies where you go, might be $25, to have a fluoride varnish put on your teeth. And it's done with a small brush. You can get a white varnish so your teeth don't go brown for a while. And that's just painted on your teeth. You sit in the dental chair. They isolate with cotton rolls, and they get in with a little brush, and they paint around your teeth. So if you're at high risk of new decay, or you come in with a current cavity, you will have this recommended in our clinics. Go to the average dentist for an adult, they won't recommend it. But they should, and they will. It's coming. So that fluoride varnish has 22,000 part per million fluoride, but there's a very little that's applied. You're not swallowing it. It's there, the fluoride is released, and it's a slow release for several weeks. This was a study done right here in San Francisco on children, 2-year-old children with fluoride varnish. And this is what's called caries incidence, the percent of patients with decay. At baseline, none of them had decay. They were Chinese and Hispanic kids down in San Francisco. those that had no fluoride in the varnish treatment, 40% of them had new decay within 2 years. Those that had once a year, a little over 20%. Twice a year, under 20%. And three times a year, less than 10%. An absolutely dramatic result with fluoride varnish treatment on these little kids. Same applies to everybody in this room, although we don't have a clinical trial on older people. Then we have a two-year clinical trial published in Sweden. And what they did was they took a 5,000 part per million toothpaste, known as a dentifrice, 5,000 part per million toothpaste, in adolescents. This was a two-year clinical trial. And in Europe, instead of 1,000 part per million, their over-the-counter product is 1,450. The Europeans are smarter than us. They've gone up. They set a maximum of 1,500 in the European common market. So everybody markets a 1,450. Here, we market 1,000. The comparison between the two was a 40% reduction in decay between here and here in adolescents. Dramatic reduction. There's another study on root caries in Ireland showing a similar reduction. And that's why we prescribe for high-risk individuals this 5,000 part per million toothpaste instead of your over-the-counter toothpaste. And it comes in various shapes and sizes. The Colgate one is called Prevident Plus, and that's 5,000 part per million, 1.1% sodium fluoride. And you use that twice a day instead of your regular toothpaste. Or the one that I prefer is from 3MSB company. It's called ClinPro 5,000. Again, 5,000 part per million fluoride toothpaste that you can get prescribed out of our clinics here. You can buy it right there when you're in getting your treatment, and you can come back every month and get it refilled and get your new product. It's not cheap. It's about $10 a tube. But you balance $100 in the year versus $1,000 for a crown. It's not a bad deal. So the last protective factors that I want to talk about is antibacterials from outside sources. So we have to disturb our biofilm. And our dental decay is a transmissible bacterial infection that I've talked about. And I'm going to skip through this, but you can pass on your bacteria. Say, for example, you're a grandparent and you're helping out feeding your grandchild, and your grandchild is a baby, and you take the bottle and you taste it in your mouth. If you've got decay, you can pass your bacteria to the baby just by doing that. So don't do that. So we've got to break the chain of infection. We need to swing our decay in the direction of protective factors. And coming back to my clinical trial here, what we did in our control group, they had no what's called chlorhexidine. In our test group, they had chlorhexidine once a day for 1 week every month. That's the bacteria reduction there, ladies and gentlemen, compared with a control group. Almost two orders of magnitude reduction in bacteria simply by rinsing once a day for 1 week with this chlorhexidine, which happens to taste terrible, but you can put up with it for a minute a day for 1 week every month. And if you're at high risk, if you've got high levels of bacteria and your fluoride alone won't do it, you have to go on to an antibacterial. And in my study, we got a 24% reduction in dental decay on average, and some people had total zero new decay in that study. So chlorhexidine was effective at reducing the bacteria, and the preferred regimen is once a day for 1 week every month. And you use that as well as your fluoride toothpaste. You've got to separate them an hour apart. So what's out there? There's several brands. One of them is called PerioGuard by Colgate, and the other one is called Peridex by 3MSB, the two companies that I showed you with the 5,000 part per million. There's also a product out there by a company called Carefree, which is hypochlorite. That's bleach, ladies and gentlemen, but it's a very well-formulated bleach. It's pH buffered. It's flavored reasonably well, and it's in two bottles, one with fluoride and one with bleach. You mix the two together and you rinse with it. To me, it tastes worse than the chlorhexidine. but it works. So both of those work. And one that's just come on the market is called silver diamine fluoride. So the silver is antibacterial. There's fluoride there for remineralization. You have a tiny brush. You just paint it onto the decayed areas in the mouth. It turns black. You paint it on your white coat, it turns black. You drop it on your floor, it turns black. So you've got to be very careful. But you put an amalgam filling in, it's black. But what this does is it stops those bacteria dead, literally. So we've just started using this in our clinics for high-risk individuals. And lastly, our xylitol gum, which you can buy in Trader Joe's, or you can get carry-free from the carry-free company. And you can chew on a xylitol gum, which the bacteria can't ferment, and it stimulates your saliva and inhibits the bacteria. So the trick is, where do you buy this? You can go to Trader Joe's and you can look through the various gums and look for the one with xylitol as the first ingredient. And that's the one to take. So in the last couple of minutes before we get on to question time, I want to just muster our resources now. We know we've got bacteria. We know we've got fermentable carbohydrates. We know we've got lack of saliva. And we know we have to swing the balance. And here we are down here not knowing quite what we want to do. And our big brothers wandering in the background here, they know how to take care of their teeth. And they've just told us, I've just told you. So, if we're a low-risk individual, in other words, an individual who is not likely to get new decay because everything's in balance, what we would want to do is look at our caries balance. We're not having high levels of bacteria. We're not a frequent snacker. We don't have subnormal saliva. We got normal saliva, and we use our fluoride toothpaste twice a day, and we don't need the antibacterial. I would hope that everyone in this room is either at that point or going to want to be at that point. What's the regimen? It's very simple, ladies and gentlemen. Maintain twice a day fluoride toothpaste brushing with one of the good ones. Could be Crest, could be Colgate, could be Arm & Hammer. Come back 12 months later and have an exam. Or if you don't want to go to the dentist, just keep on doing this and you'll be good, maybe. Okay. The high-risk patient, this is the other extreme. Got high bacteria, you've got some existing cavities, you're a frequent snacker, and you're using medications that reduce the saliva flow. You've got a high bacterial count, and you've got frequent snacking. Your protective factors, you have to have a fluoride varnish or high-concentration fluoride. You have to use your antibacterial, and you've got to use your high-concentration toothpaste and probably your xylitol gum 4 times a day, and come back and get monitored every 4 months or so. That's the other side of the coin. So the more the decay you've got, the more you have to attack it. The less you've got, the less you have to attack it. It's pretty simple, right? I've tried to simplify it down in an hour and 20 minutes for you here tonight. So here's the regimen for a high-risk individual, and you can come into our clinics and be assessed. But if you've had recent decay, if you've had decay in the last 3 years, you're at high risk, and you should be on this regimen. Our 5,000 part per million toothpaste, fluoride varnish in the dental office, xylitol gum 3 to 4 times a day, or mints, and your mouth rinse every day for 1 week, once a month. That's prescription through the dental office, that's through the dental office, and that's prescription. And remember, you're low-risk individuals. Go buy your toothpaste, use it twice a day, and you're good. Okay? So, extreme risk now, the last one, is if you have high risk plus dry mouth. That's your medications and your hypersalivation. Then what we have to do is add a baking soda rinse. And what you can do is you take a water bottle just like this, and you put 2 teaspoons of baking soda in that, and you shake it up, and you rinse with it through the day. And that neutralizes the acids. It makes your mouth feel reasonably good. You don't have to swallow it. You can spit it out, depending where you are at the time. And that's pretty much going to take care of your extreme risk. So, ladies and gentlemen, That's been a pretty rapid ride. I hope you've understood the process. I hope you know what you can now do at home. And I hope that I've given you a lot to reflect upon tonight. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions. Yes, sir. Aha. If you know you're going to be in for chemical therapy, yes, you should work with your dentist in conjunction with your oncologist, and you will probably get started on a regimen such as this right away as a preventive measure. But we would want to assess the state of your mouth right now, but if you're going to go into a hypersalivation mode, which you probably will, depending on your chemical therapy, you really should work with your dentist to get this regimen, absolutely. And if you're doing it here, you would work with our oral medicine people or in our regular clinics, and they would be in touch with your oncologist to make it happen. Great question. Yes, sir. So the question was, if you're in your 60s, for example, and you had cavities as a kid, and you had them restored, and you haven't had any cavities in, say, 20 or 30 years, but now your teeth are breaking down and falling apart, that'd be me. I had aggressive, and you did too, you had aggressive restorative therapy because that's what we used to think was a good thing to do. Now it's what we call minimally invasive, and we do as little as possible removal of the natural mineral of the teeth. But that doesn't help you and me. So now we've got cusps breaking off the crowns. We've got the potential now of gaps. We've got cracks. We've got bacteria that get in there. And that's going to put you at what we call moderate risk. And our moderate risk regimen would be twice a day fluoride toothpaste and twice a day over-the-counter fluoride rinse. Like ACT. Exactly. There's several out there. There's ACT, there's Fluoriguard. Rite Aid has their own one. And you could very easily do that yourself. And work, I would work with your dentist if you have one, or come in and see us if you don't, if you want to spend the money, or just do it yourself, whatever. The problem with doing stuff yourself is you're not going to pick up things that really need to be picked up before they get worse. But that's a regimen you can put yourself on, and you'll still have pieces breaking off your teeth. Every so often, another piece breaks off my teeth, and I come and go to one of my colleagues, and they do a little repair work. And you know, it's like an old house that pieces keep falling off, and that's the answer, basically. Yeah. Great. Other questions? The question is, does bottled water have enough fluoride? You can't tell because it's not written on the label. Some of it, this happens to be Arrowhead 100% mountain spring water, whatever that means. It may be that the Arrowhead spring water's got fluoride in, or it may not. Sometimes they will filter and purify the water to put in the water bottle, and really we'd love to get rid of these bottles. You can't even get them in public places in San Francisco anymore, but happens that I was at a lunch function today and they gave me the bottle and that's what I took. Simple answer to your question is assume that there's no fluoride in the drinking water, but that's not a big deal. As long as you use your fluoride toothpaste twice a day, you will have more fluoride delivered than you'll get out of the fluoride in the drinking water, and that will be enough as long as you're at the low caries risk end. Aha. It depends on the tea. So the question was drinking a lot of tea. The questioner said, as a Chinese person, you drink a lot of tea. Is that good or bad for the teeth? A, if you're drinking green tea or black tea, that almost certainly has a substantial amount of fluoride in it. And that's good. Usually one or two or three parts per million fluoride by the time you've made the tea. And also in green tea, there are some organic components that are slightly antibacterial. And there's quite a lot of work done in China, actually, on the antibacterial aspects of tea. And interestingly enough, I was in Chengdu in West China a year ago, almost to the day, actually. And I went into the supermarket there because I was doing a continuing education course, and I wanted the products that were available there. And in the drugstore, they had a wall about the length of that straight piece of wall there, loaded with toothpastes. And about that much was fluoride toothpaste. The rest of it was herbal toothpaste with no fluoride. And they're all claiming that that herbal toothpaste was anti-decay. And there's absolutely no clinical trial that says that. And I asked my Chinese colleague, I said, what's this all about? They said, that is the fad, that's the fashion. in China right now. I can't tell you whether that's good or bad, but there's some research talking about the antibacterial. But with the balance, you need the fluoride and the antibacterial. So you put the two together, as some of them were, the fluoride products with the herbs, and you're good. Good to go. Yeah, great. Other questions? Yes, sir. Yes. So the question was, would regular remineralization, would that be as good as or better than what Dr. Reshman was talking about with the laser treatment? The advantage with the laser treatment, by the way, is it actually alters the outer, very small, thin area of the enamel where it's being treated, and it makes it caries resistant. That's not approved by the FDA as a as an approved therapy at this point, but the laser is approved for cutting cavities. So it's safe to use. And the big advantage with that particular laser, if you have a relatively small cavity and you cut it out with the laser, that whole area around the cavity wall now is resistant to decay. And you put the restoration in, the filling in, and you treat with fluoride, you get a double whammy. And the research that we've done shows that the two are additive, so you get an extra effect. So we're very excited that going into the future, that's going to be part of the way of the future. And by the way, that laser technology was developed right here at UCSF. Yeah. Yes? The question is, what about coffee? Coffee with sugar, of course, will do the bad things, providing the sugar. Not only providing the sugar, but providing it in a heated beverage, which is ideal because the bacteria grow even faster under those conditions. Not ideal for you. But black coffee will have no effect one way or the other on dental decay. Okay, folks, it's been a lot of fun, and thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.